I just downloaded it just to distract myself and have fun and watch funny videos. But then I started making videos and people liked it. My dad and my grandpa just looked at each other and said, we have created an absolute monster. And I've been fishing since. The state chairman of DU Georgia called me and he said, we want you to be our publicist. And I was like, you're kidding. You know, at the beginning, I was looking so cute. I had on my little upland bird hunting outfit. Then afterwards, I looked like a wet dog. I hunt ducks, I hunt deer, pheasants, bass fishing, trout fishing, offshore, inshore, and sometimes I just don't have time to do what I want. Hey, y'all, this is Macy Watkins, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I've been blessed to harvest 22 of the 29 North American animals with my bow.
My personal 24-hour record for death threats is 88.
They will start putting two and two together and realize this is how you call bulls in.
So when I go hunting now, that's the ethos I take with me. You know, whatever this hunter's going to throw at you, pull your big girl pants up and you get on with it.
Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
So I'm a geek. Magicians and dragons and magic swords. I kid you not, man. I'm the biggest dork in the gun business.
I'm Freddie Hartice, Hollywood Hunter.
This is Aaron Snyder.
Hey, this is Trevin Stoltzfus with Outback Outdoors.
This is Rihanna Carey.
Hi, this is John Sloan of the Interviews with the Hunting Masters.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Today, I am on the line with the one and only Macy Watkins. I came across Macy's profile on TikTok, of all places. I hesitate to admit that, but I was on TikTok and I was like, you know, she's a lot of fun. She's authentic, and I need to have her on the podcast. So I think I ended up reaching out on Instagram. Finally, was when we finally connected, and we're both rather busy schedules, especially through the holidays. But we managed to finally sync up. So I'm really glad to have you on, Macy.
Thanks, Sam. I'm glad to be here. I've actually never done a podcast, so this is my debut. Don't go so hard on me.
Well, you know, as we talked, it's a conversation, so and it's about you, so nowhere to go wrong here. So really, one thing I always like to start out with is just kind of an introduction as to who you are, and really how did you get introduced to the outdoors and hunting and fishing and all of that? Like, where'd you get your start?
Okay. So, I guess what I got popularity on online was my job. I do work in the outdoor industry as a PR agent. But that's not all I do. I do PR, media planning, advertising, planning hunts and fishing events for my clients at Source Outdoor Group in Gainesville, Georgia. We have around 40 to 50 clients, and I could say them all, but Not going to do that. But they're all of your favorite brands that you see in Bass Pro or Cabela's or just on the aisles of Walmart. So that's what I do as a career. But TikTok, you know, I just downloaded it just to distract myself and have fun and watch funny videos. But then I started making videos and people liked it. I was just on there being myself and people liked that. So I kept doing it. And now I kind of have this influencing deal where I post videos on TikTok and YouTube. I have a Facebook page, Instagram. I'm always working. I work all day. Then I get home and I work on myself. So that's what I do.
So how did you then get introduced to the outdoors originally? You know, what got you started on hunting and fishing?
Okay. So I'm from middle Georgia and there's nothing else to do. So everyone ends up doing outdoor activities because we don't have a mall. We don't have stores. We don't have, you know, a lot of entertainment. So that is what we grew up doing. And I did play travel softball and I played college softball. So that took up a big chunk of my time and my life back then. But on the weekends and in spare time, I would be fishing with my grandpa, my dad, my brother. Just at local farm ponds that we had access to, some that we didn't have access to, but that's how I got my start was pond fishing, you know, just simple fishing with your grandpa and your dad. And then, you know, later years, I really got into bass fishing just around the ponds. And then growing up fishing on Lake Sinclair, which is in Milledgeville, Georgia, you know, hunted some. I didn't get serious about hunting until my recent years, like in college. I guess that's not so recent now. I'm 24 now. So now I've always been really into bird hunting with my family.
I'll tell you some of my favorite times fishing here. You're talking about fishing just like local farm ponds and things like that. And people on the podcast have probably heard me say this a million times, but one of my favorite all times fishing, was in a cattle pond down in Arizona. And it was just, we had been hunting pronghorn and mule deer for like 2 weeks straight and just killing ourselves and having no luck. We're like, we just need to take an afternoon and evening off and just kind of relax. So we went to the farm pond, you know, grabbed a little small cooler beers and package of hot dogs and just went jack pulling for bluegill the entire time. And I swear we probably caught the same four bluegill like 13 different times, but it's just one of the best times. And I feel like if you're going to introduce someone to the outdoors, that's gotta be one of the best ways to do it. Cause it's so low impact. Doesn't really cost you much of anything, you know, especially got an extra rod. And I just love sitting back and fishing.
I mean, you can't beat it. I grew up fishing at this pond in a little town called McIntyre, Georgia. And I mean, I could catch them every cast with my grandpa. And I remember we went for the first time and my dad and my grandpa just looked at each other and said, we have created an absolute monster. And I've been fishing since, begged them to go as a child. And then, you know, we'd keep all the bluegill and the bream and have a fish fry. And my church always has a fish fry and we would fish at that pond. And I caught most of the fish for the church. So that's how I got started. Just simple pond fishing.
Well, and so now, you know, I feel like that's a little bit of a departure from your latest fishing trip.
Yeah.
You know, you, it's a little bit of a step up from bluegill, heading out to Venice, on your recent fishing trip.
Oh yeah. So, you know, starting out just fishing ponds as a child and then getting really into bass fishing and some local tournaments and derbies. And then when I went to Venice, oh my gosh, that just changed everything. I'm catching, you know, 60-pound tuna, which is one of the small ones. you know, they catch them much larger than that. I got to go cobia fishing, caught snapper, grouper. It was such a good day of fishing. And then I came back home and, you know, I would go fishing. I'm just like, this is
so. So it kind of ruined you on the on the local small fish then?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I really enjoy going out in my kayak and bass fishing, but now I'm just always thinking about my next trip offshore.
That's something I've done a little bit of ocean fishing back in the day when I was a kid with my grandpa. But that's one thing I've still, it's still on my list. I need to get out and do. And I have a buddy that, my buddy Brett Cannon, he and I are going to take a trip out one of these days if I ever get out to Florida for some sailfish. And I'm really, really excited to do some offshore stuff. But what was it that was, I mean, other than maybe just the size, the sheer size of the fish that you're pulling out of the water, what is it that's so like alluring about the offshore fishing?
Oh, it's all about the fight. Yeah. You got to have some fight in you to pull those fish up. Cause you may fight a fish for an hour, 2 hours. You know, me, I fought it for 30 minutes, but, but it's all about the fight. You do all that work to get the fish in, you know, you're at the end of your leader and then it just takes off again. So it's just a feeling of accomplishment when you finally get that humongous fish in. Tuna, they start pinwheeling when they get to the boat. So they start swimming in little circles when they get to the boat until someone eventually gaffs them when they're close enough. But I would say the most addicting part is the fight and just the time that it takes to get the fish in. You know, you're not just reeling, like you're physically exhausted once you get the fish in.
So, I mean, it's, you know, you're out there and it's not, I feel like people that are used to fishing, they're kind of like, okay, yeah, it's cool when a fish hits and, you know, it fights and you gotta reel it in. But I feel like most people are used to catching, you know, a decent sized trout or yeah, like a bass, and a bass will give you a fight now and again, but yeah, it's definitely just nothing compared to when you got like a 70 to 80 pound fish on the end of the line. And I mean, that thing's pulling on you just as hard as you're pulling on it.
And, oh yeah. They fight back. If anyone plans on going offshore, I would suggest working out first. Getting in shape.
A little bit of an upper body workout and your back and everything.
Oh yeah.
By the time you're done.
Mm-hmm. I was in pain.
Cause there's like a little like special deals. There's those special like rod belt things you wear, right?
Yeah.
For reeling those in too.
There's a belt and kind of a strap where you can kind of sit down in your legs and use your bottom half to kind of leverage to get the fish in. That when I went in Venice, I went with a group of 8 men that was a work trip, and you know that the captains would make fun of them if they wanted a belt, but you know I was the girl on the trip, so I could use the belt and not get made fun of. But sometimes you just need it, you know, those fish are so big, you just need it.
That's why, like, I just can't, I'm excited to get out there and try it sometime and really get to experience that. But like, I just can't imagine it right now. And especially with the fish I've been catching lately, I picked up fly fishing this year, and I've been fishing some small mountain streams. And so like the monsters I've been catching,
I've seen your profile, Sam.
yeah, exactly. It's when you try and like long arm it to hold the fish out, but you can't see the fish just because it's so small, it hides behind your fingers.
Yeah, that's why you hold it and you bend like the first few joints of your finger and put it under the fish and hold it more like this.
There you go. There you go.
With 2 fingers out. That's what I learned.
There we go. Yeah, I gotta learn all the techniques. I mean, I grew up fishing. But it was always, you know, the same lake, same stocked lake in the mountains for trout. And I loved it, but I got to learn all the tricks to like the catch and release and showing off.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm such an amateur when it comes to trout fishing, but about a year or two ago, I said, this is something I want to learn. I want it to be my thing and I want to be good at it. I just want to do it, you know, after work on the weekends. So I started trout fishing in the North Georgia mountains. And like you said, I'm just catching little stock trout, but getting so hype over it. And then a couple native streams, just wading down the whole thing. I love it, but I do not fly fish. I haven't gotten into that.
That was my task this year. And it's a whole thing, but I tell you what, when you're fishing those dries and you just see one strike, and I mean, your technique has to be on point to keep them on the hook. Cause it's not, yeah. You know, I'm used to, as a kid, I'm used to hunting with a treble, or hunting. I'm used to fishing with a treble hook and, you know, some power bait and just hucking it out there and kicking back in my chair, reading my book until I feel a tug. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I grew up doing. And when you're fishing that, like, those fish will swallow those things whole. Like, you know, half of the time they'll swallow that thing and they're hooked and they're just swimming around. You don't even notice it.
Yeah.
You
know?
And so it doesn't take quite the technique that something like fly fishing does a lot of the time. In learning that technique, it's like you have to be on point to keep that thing off the hook. Like, once it hits, that's not even half the battle yet. Like, mm-hmm. You got to figure out how to get that thing in the net, and you're fishing by yourself, and it's been a journey, but I'll tell you what, it's a lot of fun. But you know, it hasn't taken away from that enjoyment, I find, like sitting and throwing lures out for bass or anything like that. Everything's got its own, I don't know, its own allure.
Yes, it can all be appreciated.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
So do you still do any of the, like, the bass fishing tournaments, or do you get out? I mean, I know you get out some on your kayak, but
yeah, I've gotten away from tournaments. I don't really know why. I'm interested in doing kayak tournaments. I just really need a kayak upgrade. I still have one that you paddle, where if you're fishing, you really need one that you can pedal, like with your feet. Mm-hmm. So, and I just have too many hobbies. I'm into so much that I'm so spread out. You know, I hunt ducks, I hunt deer, pheasants, bass fishing, trout fishing, offshore, inshore. And sometimes I just don't have time to do what I want, like tournaments. I mean, it's all what I want to do, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's, I feel really bad for you. You know, it's a rough life.
I know, right? I know.
I just, you know, I don't have time to go bass fishing because I'm duck and pheasant hunting too much. I mean, geez.
That, you know? That sounded so privileged, and I want to apologize.
No, it did not at all. I'm making fun of you for it, just because I'm kind of in the same spot now, where it's finally like I've been working to build this life. And, you know, everyone asks, like, why I started the podcast and why I do what I do and this and that and the other. And it's honestly, it's because I want to hunt, I want to fish, and this was the best opportunity for me to get out there and do more of that and learn about it. Because I didn't have anyone to reach out to originally.
Yep.
I mean, now I consider myself lucky. Like, I can call up awesome people like you and be like, hey, let's talk about hunting and fishing for the next hour.
Yes.
But, you know, when I started, I had no idea. I just knew I wanted to hunt and get out there.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm lucky enough to where, yeah, I can spend my weekends duck hunt, having to choose between duck hunting or going fly fishing, or maybe picking up some doe tags and trying to fill the freezer a little bit more or something like that. It's a great opportunity.
I know, right? When I took my job in the outdoor industry, I had no clue what I was getting into. And I don't want you to think it's all glamorous, because a lot of these trips I go on are just, you know, out of my own pocket. It's something I decided to do, but then some of the trips are trips that my clients send me on, or my boss. So
it's, and you know, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, is the idea of, you know, right now it's kind of finding that sweet spot, because a lot of the time, you know, you do have to ask the question, like, okay, do I want to hunt, or do I want to work in the hunting industry?
Mm-hmm.
Because you think about it, you know, all that time when we're prepping for season, so is everyone else. And so that's when our clients are in high gear and are running sales and are trying to push stuff out there. And that's when we need to be on point, when we'd probably much rather be getting our gear set for trip that's coming down the line in a month, you know?
Oh yeah. I'd rather be hunting every day. I'd rather be fishing every day, but I personally enjoy marketing, and I enjoy marketing my clients' products. That doesn't allow me to be outdoors every single day, but that allows me connections and networking and, you know, just friends across the country, colleagues, and just great professional experience because of the path I chose.
Well, I think there's such a benefit too, is I've worked in a lot of different industries, and I realize, and doing fairly close to the same thing across the board, you know, with little changes here and there, but I've realized that when you are working with like-minded people with the same passions as you, makes the days go by a lot faster than mm-hmm. when, you know, maybe you're doing marketing for the vegan burger industry, which I always joke, and most of people listening know, is one of my clients is actually a vegan burger restaurant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a former boss of mine, and He came up and asked me, and I'm like, have you been drinking? Like, he's like, no, you do great work. I want you to do the web. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm fine with it. And I'll do the damn fine job for you. But
that's hilarious.
So fishing's not all you do. You also do a lot of bird hunting, a lot of pheasant and duck, and you hunt deer.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't say I do a lot of pheasant hunting. I just got an opportunity to go in Wisconsin. But I do love duck hunting. I work for Ducks Unlimited on the side. It's all volunteer, but I'm the state publicist for the state of Georgia. The state chairman of DU Georgia called me earlier this year, probably around June or July, and he said, "We want you to be our publicist." And I was like, "You're kidding." Like, Ducks Unlimited? He said, "Yeah, for our great state of Georgia." So I took it, and I've been doing it since. Making so many friends and just networking. And then with that came more duck hunting trips. So I've been, just in the last couple months, I've been to Venice again, which is where I tuna fished, mm-hmm. which the duck hunting is just as good down there, if not better. And then I took a trip up to La Crosse, Wisconsin on the Mississippi River. And what was so cool about those two trips was one weekend I was down in Venice, Louisiana, which is the most southern point of the Mississippi River that you can hunt. Like, they call it the end of the world. Like, that's as far as you can go. So we were hunting out of a boat blind there. And then a week later I was in Wisconsin hunting that same river. So it's really cool.
That's wild that it's, I mean, you know, you want to talk about an iconic river to hunt on. Like, that's about it.
Yeah. And it's beautiful in both places, you know, in Louisiana, it's marshy and just so beautiful. Then you get up to Wisconsin and it's, you know, the rolling hills and mountains, and it is freezing, but it's beautiful. I'm from Georgia, so, you know, I had pocket full of hand warmers. I was like, give me the heater, you know.
This is my first season duck hunting. I've always been wanting to do it for a while, and I finally got out. And one of the trips I went on recently, it was, I mean, you know, we're out here in Montana and it gets a bit cold out here, and we had a real big cold snap come in, and I was bundled up pretty well, but it finally got to the point where I'm like, all these guys are from Montana and from Wyoming. I'm like, I'm from California. I'm from Northern California. So we get some weather, but man, just let's turn on the heater for a little. Turned on the Mr. Heater. And I sat huddled around that thing. And I mean, it was not the most active trip. Visibility was pretty low. Like, we could basically, the wind picked up and we could basically see to the end of our setup. And that was about it. So we had a couple of action packed moments where all of a sudden the ducks would be there out of nowhere.
Exactly.
They'd be flying and you're like, oh crap, get back in the blind, back in the blind.
Yeah. Like, head down, head down.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely learned the joy of having a propane heater in the duck blind on that.
I know. And I was with people that hunt in the North, or either they're from the North. That's who I was with. And they're just used to it. You know, they're just fine. And I'm over here in layers and layers. I have my Sitka gradient hoodie on with layers and layers under it. And they're like, we're not cold. This is good weather. I'm like, pass me the heater, please. So I was a little diva about it. Hey, gotta stay warm.
I like the cold weather, but I'm definitely have not developed my Montana skin yet. So yeah. this winter's going to be an interesting experience for me.
Well, there's hope for us. We just have to adapt. I'm from the South, you know. if I see snow, it's a big deal.
I was gonna say my elk hunting trip last year was winter, like hit really stinking early, and a good majority. And fortunately, I'd prepped for it, and I'd brought all my cold weather gear too, and I was doing pretty good. But there's a couple of mornings where I got up out of my bag, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm like prepping my coffee, and my jet boil just will not even turn on because it's like negative 10, and I'm trying to like get my broadheads like set back on my bow, and my hands are shaking so bad, like I can't get them fixed up. And oh man, there's a couple of mornings that were rather. I started carrying my sleeping bag with me in my pack because I was going from a spike camp, and I started rolling up my extra sleeping bag with me and keeping it in my pack. Cause then I'd sit and I'd like wrap myself up in it and zip it up all the way to my face. And it was a mummy bag. And I'd sit behind the binoculars and like glass in my sleeping bag.
Oh my gosh. No, that's something you should post.
I wish I had a picture of it.
That's funny.
It was pretty good. I would have given anything to have somebody there with me to have like taken a solid picture of me with the covered in snow in the sleeping bag. But
yeah,
I figured it's kind of like those giant like wubbies that people wear in tree stands now. You know, it's like the giant sleeping bag with arms.
That's basically a glorified Snuggie.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a down Snuggie.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The tree stand, the whole tree stand thing. I went on my first like deer camp last year in Missouri. And I've sat in a tree stand once or twice before, but that was my first like real experience with early morning metal tree stand sucking the joy and warmth out of me.
Yeah.
at like 4 a.m, can't feel my toe. Yeah, I got the heaters in my hands and feet, but I still can't feel them. And oh man, sitting still is not my my forte.
Oh, for sure. But talk about cold weather. The duck hunting in Wisconsin, you know, that was bearable. I could stand that. But we went pheasant hunting, and it just, the sky fell out with snow. It was everywhere. It was so cold. And it was just, I made this TikTok video saying it was spitting snow. And I was about to go hunting, you know, I was showing where I was. I was in Cashton, Wisconsin, and I actually went viral in the state of Wisconsin. And, there are people from Wisconsin saying, oh my gosh, where is she? It looks like she's at Nelson Farm. And I turned to my hunting partners. I'm like, are we at Nelson Farm? They're like, yeah. So it's so funny that they recognized where I was from the silo and the farm and the barns and all. So that was our pheasant hunt. What did you say?
Legions of fans mobbing you at Nelson Farm.
No, but I had a lot of comments, you know, from, what do they call themselves? Sconnies? People from Wisconsin. Idea. I think that's what they call themselves. But they were like asking me out for a beer, or like saying, hey, meet up, or you should come to my farm. But yeah, seems like they're great people up there. And I had a great hunt, except it was just super cold. You know, we were all in a line walking the fields, the snowy fields. By the end, I was soaking wet with snow. And that's the coldest I've ever been in my life.
That's the one thing. Like, fortunately, the weather was pretty decent when I went on my pheasant hunt this year. Like, it wasn't, it was chilly, but it was mostly just like, okay, we just layer up with a jacket or two and you're fine. But I'll take walking fields in snowy weather like that over just, unless you got a heater then that's one thing, but like versus like just sitting in a blind or sitting in a tree stand any day. If I'm moving, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like I can generate that heat, but sitting in the tree stand or the blind is just my poor frozen butt can't handle it.
Exactly. But if you're walking, then your feet aren't going to get cold, you know, you're up moving. So that was good until all the snow had fell on me, you know, got in my hair. My hair was wet, you know, I didn't have the best waterproof gear with me that day. I need to invest in some more, but yeah, that's the coldest I've ever been. It was great though. I got back and people were like, how was that pheasant hunt? And I was like, you know, at the beginning, I was looking so cute. I had on my little upland bird hunting outfit, you know, so ready to hunt. It was taken, you know, I posted a selfie. Then afterwards, I looked like a wet dog. My hair was soaking wet. I had on mascara, you know, it ran down my face. But I'm proudly holding like 10 birds. So it was great. It was so fun.
I remember you sharing one picture at least, and you had like full on at that point. You just about looked like the little kid from Christmas Story when he's all like wrapped up. You I think you had finally put on just about every layer you brought with you.
Yeah, everyone there could tell she's definitely from the South. But before I opened my mouth, they could tell. So.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
So say somebody wanted to get started in hunting, you know, they're down in Georgia where you're from, and they maybe don't have any friends or family that are into it. They don't know who to reach out to, but they wanted to kind of get into it and really get their start in the outdoors. What would you recommend to them?
I would say do some research. And, you know, get licensed. You have to take a hunter safety course. So I would say learn safety first, because that's of utmost importance. And there's plenty of resources on the Georgia DNR website. My neighbor is a wildlife tech in the DNR, and he tells me about youth hunts that are happening all the time. And I don't think you necessarily have to have a parent or a guardian. They're made for kids that don't have family that are educated on or live in that way or have that lifestyle. So there's plenty of youth hunts, youth fishing events that are all about, you know, educational purposes and giving kids those opportunities.
So what would you say for somebody that's never been hunting, what would you say would be like a good type of hunt for them to go on? Like what would you recommend for them to start looking into first?
I mean, I guess it would be on their preference, what animal they want to hunt, but maybe start out with a good guided trip in Georgia.
So you'd recommend then looking into maybe some guided trips as a good way to kick that off?
Yeah. I mean, I started out doing guided trips. I mean, you just have to research it. It may cost some money, you know. Guided trips are expensive, but you learn so much. You learn about animal behavior. You learn so much from the guide that you can take away and go hunt on your own or with buddies. I recommend hunting with buddies, not by yourself, especially if you're bird hunting.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really kind of cool things that's unique about bird hunting compared to a lot of other things, is it's such a social thing, whether you're all sitting in the blind together or you're, you know, you got your running dogs through fields for pheasant or dove or chucker or whatever it happens to be. I feel like that's just one of the unique things. You can talk, you can interact. It's not like, you know, sitting in a tree stand for deer or hiking the mountains for elk.
Yeah. Super quiet, try not to fall asleep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it is a social experience. I mean, that's why I enjoy it, because everybody knows I'm so social. But in the duck blind, like, I mean, it's like heaven when you're in a blind. Somebody's cooking breakfast. You have thermoses full of coffee with hazelnut cream. You know, a couple little Debbies. I mean, it's like heaven to me. You're able to talk. Sometimes we turn on, you know, a funny podcast. It's all about the experience. So that's why I enjoy it the most.
All right. So if folks wanted to follow along with all of Macy's shenanigans, where can they find you?
Okay. So I've always been on Instagram, like since the beginning of time, since Instagram was a thing. And I post most of my hunting pictures there and fishing. And then I'm super big on TikTok these days. That's how I kind of got my, not my start, but, you know, it gave me my boost in the industry and online. I guess that's what I'm known for is my TikToks. That girl from TikTok. So
we
I'm
need,
on there.
We need to make you a shirt that says, I'm pretty big on TikTok.
You know, I when people say, are you the girl from TikTok? I'm like, no, I'm Macy Watkins, actually. But I've also started doing some YouTube videos. I'm new at it, but I'm starting to post a lot of videos there that are more extended content and maybe stuff that I can't show on TikTok, I'll put on YouTube. And so I'm really trying to grow that. And I have a Facebook page where I post even more stuff.
All right. So if people just pretty much search Macy Watkins on any of those platforms, they'll be able to find you.
Oh, yeah. I'm everywhere. I try to be everywhere and I try to post different stuff on each platform, like not just a repost on every single platform that I have. You know, Instagram, I try to put the really cool pictures. TikTok is more laid back and funny. YouTube is just more in depth, you know, more about me that you might not see in other places. And Facebook is kind of just, you know, the family friendly content, the promotions, the, you know, updating people on where I am in the world. That's what you can expect.
There you go. Well, I will make sure to link to those on the show notes page. Macy, thank you so much for taking the time today to sit down.
Awesome. You're welcome. I had so much fun. You should do it again.
Definitely. And I hope your first podcast wasn't too terrifying. So
no, I really liked this. And I think it's a good way to connect with fans and just other hunters and fishermen. And I really enjoyed this.
Awesome. All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Big thank you to Macy for taking the time out of her day to hop on. Make sure you go check out all her social profiles. Go give her some love. Go enjoy her TikTok. She's got some fun stuff on there for y'all. But that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this podcast inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment. Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.